Good afternoon, everyone. The Justice Appropriations Subcommittee will now come to order. Rosa, please call the roll.
Chair Plaken.
Here.
Vice Chair Fernandez-Barkin.
Here.
Representatives Barnaby.
Here.
Beltran.
Here.
Benjamin.
Here.
Byrd.
Here.
Caruso.
Here.
Davis.
Here.
Fabricio.
Here.
Gottlieb.
Here.
Gregory.
Here.
Coster.
Here.
Learned.
Here.
Rayner.
Here.
Smith.
Here.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. A quorum being present, I want to welcome everybody to the Justice Appropriations Subcommittee. It's good to see people back in the room. Please make sure cell phones and other communication devices are off or in silent mode. And I want to begin today by welcoming our new Vice Chair, Representative Fernandez-Barkin, and Ranking Member Gottlieb.
Inside joke.
And the rest of our returning members of the subcommittee. Additionally, we have four new members joining our subcommittee for this session. I want to take a moment to welcome Representatives Barnaby, Fabricio, Coster, and Smith. I look forward to working with you this year as we move through the process. Hope everyone had a great summer, got all rested up. We've got a lot of work to do in this committee this year, and I'm looking forward to working with all of you. In the early committee, now in November, we'll be hearing from some of the agencies. They all submitted their LBRs, I think, on September 15th. And we're going to hear today from the Department of Juvenile Justice, the Department of Legal Affairs, Attorney General, and the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. And probably in November, we'll be heading some of the other agencies under our jurisdiction. So without further ado, let's go right into our agenda and begin the presentations. Presenting today on behalf of Department of Juvenile Justice is the Acting Secretary, Josefina Tamayo. Secretary Tamayo, you are recognized.
If you'll just give us a moment, we saw the Attorney General's. Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Plaken and Vice Chair Fernandez-Barkin. It's a pleasure to be here. My name is Josefina Tamayo. I'm the Acting Secretary of the Department of Juvenile Justice, and I'm very happy to present DJJ's legislative budget request for fiscal year 22-23. I want to take a moment to say that it's been an incredible honor to work alongside many of dedicated staff at the Florida Department of Juvenile Justice. The team at DJJ is truly committed to making a difference in the lives of young people throughout Florida, and I'm extremely proud to be part of that leadership and to lead them every day. And they have not faltered, as I say, from this mission, and I'm very grateful that the governor has allowed me to serve in this position, and I'm in awe every day of what they do. Now, I started my career many years ago, 35 years ago, as a prosecutor in Sarasota County, and I've been a public servant for more than 35 years, so a little bit of my background. So our agency's top priorities continue to be the achievement and successful outcomes for youth through data-driven, evidence-based services and to ensure public safety. Florida's juvenile justice system is a leader in the nation, and thanks to its many dedicated shareholders as a component of that system, our agency will continue to work alongside our partners to sustain the successes we've seen and to help children turn their lives around and to continue to better our communities and safer communities. We are very appreciative of last year's fiscal budget. The legislature funded the department and the governor's main priorities, which included critical funding for our detention, medical, and mental health services, and funding for critical fixed capital outlay for our buildings. And recognizing the limited budget and diverse needs of our great state, our budget requests truly reflect our most essential operating priorities for 22-23. For fiscal year 2022 to 2023, we're requesting an increase of approximately 6% above our 2021 base budget, including 8 additional FTEs to meet our most essential operating needs. We have seven priority funding issues, and they are, number one, a market-based parity adjustment for recruitment and retention for our direct care staff. Two, electronic monitoring technology enhancement. Three, fidelity monitoring and oversight of evidence-based services and risk assessments. That carries with it a request for funding for five FTEs. Deferred building maintenance, network security enhancements, Florida Palm readiness, and transition from an electronic medical record funding for to an electronic health record. Our first request is to address the recruitment and retention concerns for our juvenile detention officer and juvenile probation officer positions. The turnover rate associated with these positions has consistently risen over the last decade and is currently at unsustainable high levels. Despite repeated efforts to address these issues, including a more recent approved increase in the base rate of pay associated with these positions, the trends and conditions related to turnover rates and recruitment continue to worsen and are not expected to improve. Without taking further action, and given the current trending conditions in the general labor market. For these reasons, the department is requesting $15.3 million in recurring budget authority to provide for additional costs necessary to implement a market-based parity pay adjustment to increase salaries, to address recruitment and retention concerns within our juvenile detention officer series and our juvenile justice probation officer classes as well. To address these ongoing concerns, the proposal involves an increase in the base rate of pay associated with each class, additionally, and to address the expected pay inequities among incumbents as a result of implementing the proposed increases to the base pay associated with entry-level positions. This proposal incorporates pay equity matrices that provide for additional salary adjustments for current employees that are currently in those classes. Our second request is for $280,000 to provide for procurement of a more technologically advanced electronic monitoring equipment used to monitor juveniles under DJJ's supervision. As the courts continue to order electronic monitoring of youth, and the electronic monitoring technology continues to evolve, the equipment being utilized currently to monitor high-risk offenders has become outdated and results sometimes in technical glitches, false alerts, false batteries, and inaccurate or dropped global positioning system satellite signals. The use of this technology, advanced electronic monitoring equipment, will improve accuracy, accountability, and reduce the time it takes for DJJ to respond to alerts, which will improve DJJ's ability to immediately inform our law enforcement when there is a violation. This proposal would provide for 284 replacement units equipped with new and innovative functions and will be compatible for use with most of the up-to-date technology. And this quantity is consistent with the three-year average of daily use. And we use that. Children are placed on electronic monitoring, obviously not in secure detention, but can be placed on electronic monitors for those who know. Our third request is that we are requesting in excess of $413,000 to fund five additional full-time position equivalent positions to provide for an increase in the number and frequency of reviews to monitor delinquency intervention services provided in our residential settings, our residential programs that we have throughout the state. The department currently lacks the resources needed to sufficiently provide comprehensive oversight and ensure service provision of all delinquency intervention services, and we want to make sure that they are delivered as contractors and aligned with research best practices and standards. DJJ is requesting to increase the number and frequency of reviews to monitor all intervention programs. And we have staff that monitor programs throughout the state. And so we want to add an additional five FTEs to that initiative and to hold people accountable. This initiative would provide for adequate resources needed to enhance monitoring efforts related to increasing the number of program evaluations and to ensure our providers are focused on the services being provided to our children. Our next request is we are asking for approximately $15.1 million in fixed capital outlay budget authority to address deferred building maintenance in DJJ's aging facilities. DJJ maintains hundreds of buildings statewide, and approximately 65% of them are over 25 years old. This request also provides for facility security updates at multiple sites, and funding will be used to correct security concerns and ensure safety to both youth and staff, and will include fencing repairs, locking replacement, repairing acquisition of master controls, closed circuit television repairs, HVAC systems, installation of fire suppression sprinkler systems, and upgrades and repairs to the doors and windows in our facilities. Our next funding request is for $223,000 in funding to implement our multi-factor authentication. It's called the multi-factor authentication on the department's network to improve its security posture. This is a requirement of the Criminal Justice Information Network security requirement. And we run the Juvenile Justice Information System, which is the largest information system in the country and obviously in Florida. While the current network access control solution restricts unauthorized users from accessing the network through a non-DJJ authorized computer, the potential threat exists that a rogue user could access confidential information through an authorized DJJ computer because the network only requires a single layer of authentication. So the department is currently using Active Directory, which authenticates and authorizes all users and computers when they log in. Use of the multi-factor authentication in conjunction with our existing Active Directory adds an additional layer to our security profile and reduces the possibility of rogue access. And we keep all information regarding youth in our care and custody, as you know, or if you don't know, in our juvenile justice information system, and that information is confidential, so we want to make sure that we're ensuring the security of that data. Our next request, members, the department is asking for $181,278 in funding to provide for dedicated contract staff members to for the migration and implementation to the Florida Palm Accounting and Ledger Management Palm system. The department needs a dedicated IT professional to develop an interface to exchange department data and serve really as a subject matter expert in that transition. The department's juvenile justice has 10 applications, and that will be impacted by the Florida Palm project, and we consider that an important request in order to continue down that road. Our final request, members, is for as we're transitioning to an electronic medical record to an electronic health record. So we are requesting in excess of $695,000 to fund three FTE positions to provide for the acquisition of necessary equipment to facilitate the transition from DJJ's electronic medical record to the establishment of an electronic health record. This transition will ensure compliance with federal, state, and community standards of care. An electronic medical record provides digital versions of paper charts in doctors' offices, clinics, and hospitals, and contains notes and information collected by and for clinicians in that office. An electronic health record is built to go beyond the standard clinical data that is collected and is inclusive of a broader view that we need. Our electronic health record, the electronic health record would contain information from all clinicians, doctors, mental health physicians, everything, prescriptions and so forth. So we are requesting that. And that is all involved in the day-to-day care for our kids from detention all the way through residential treatment. We are currently one of the few organizations in both state and private sectors without the capacity to fully function, without a fully functional electronic health record. And without that fully functional electronic health records, medical records can be accessed, they're accessed on site, and which take time. And obviously, as you know, we have individuals that not are only treating our kids in our facilities, and our detention facilities, but also we're overseeing what they're doing and monitoring to making sure that they're receiving the services that they have. So being able to see that in one electronic health record would be very helpful. This, of course, would enhance the quality of services rendered to our youth, help to meet the goals and expectations of the Department of Juvenile Justice, and would ensure a seamless continuity of care by providing a means by which all authorized clinicians, regardless of what part of the system they're in, is involved in the youth's care and access information stored in the EHR, which follows the patients from specialist to specialist to specialist. So, and with that, Mr. Chairman, that concludes the legislative budget request on behalf of the Department of Juvenile Justice.
Thank you, members. And are there any questions for Secretary Tamayo? You recognize?
Yes, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Yes.
Thank you, Secretary. I've just got a couple of questions as it relates to the deferred building maintenance. Mm-hmm. I know that there's some buildings, particularly in Broward, where I come from, that I think it's probably beyond a maintenance issue. I've been told they need a whole new facility. So is and I may be wrong, and I'm sure you know better than I do, but is that building considered a maintenance issue, or is there funding later coming for perhaps a new facility?
Recognize.
Thank you, Chair. We're trying to make sure that we have maintenance to fix our facilities. This does not envision, Representative, the building of a new facility at this juncture.
You recognize for another question?
Yes, sir.
As it relates to Broward, do you know if and when that's coming?
And what facility are you specifically talking about? The detention facility?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. I'm going down to visit the detention facility and to see exactly. I know that, as I say, some of our facilities are older. And so what we want to make sure is that they're up to par and so forth. And if necessary to have to do that, then we will take that up.
Recognize?
If necessary.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to take that visit with you, if you'd
Absolutely.
Like.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I welcome everyone, all members of this committee, to visit all our detention facilities and all our residential treatment programs. We would love to have you. It's important. Yes, sir.
Representative Gottlieb, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. And then my question on the ELMOs, the electronic monitoring equipment, are those for pre or post trial?
You recognize?
They are for children who are not in secure detention but are released pre-trial on home supervision, home detention. They can be placed on electronic monitoring and post. Yes.
Go ahead.
Purely due to judicial order, or does the department have discretion to put an ELMO on if they feel the offender needs it?
If they, based on their risk assessment, is assessed to home supervision, depending on what the assessment number is on our detention risk assessment,
right.
It comes with an electronic monitor. And then the courts also request electronic monitors.
You recognize?
Is that only for 21 days, or is that beyond the 21-day period?
It's.
You recognize for an answer? Go ahead, if you could
sorry.
Go through the chair.
I'm sorry.
No problem?
Yes, it's for the 21 days, okay. And they, yes, sir, it's for the 21 days.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next up, Representative Caruso, you're recognized for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the presentation, Madam Secretary. With regards to the market-based parity pay adjustment of $15 million, that request for $15 million, for the juvenile justice officers, what does that do to a typical officer's salary?
Okay.
Takes it from what to what?
Go ahead.
Thank you. So, very good question. Thank you for asking that, Representative. There are three classes. There are three positions in the juvenile detention officer series or classes. We have our juvenile detention officer one, detention officer two, classification two, and supervisors. So currently, our juvenile detention officers make $13.47 an hour. So we would be requesting that they be raised to $17 an hour. For our juvenile detention officer two, they are currently making $14.04 an hour, and we are requesting that they be raised to $17.85 an hour. For our juvenile detention officer supervisors, they are currently making $14.86 an hour, and we are requesting an increase to $18.74. And as you can understand, we have, the turnover rate is very large, and so we want to make sure that we are hiring and competitive, because because these are individuals that are taking care of children in our detention centers 24 hours a day in 21 locations throughout Florida.
Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome, and if you need anything else, we'll be glad to provide it.
Okay, next up, Representative Beltran.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Secretary, for your presentation. The last slide you had, it was $700,000 for the medical, updating the medical record system. There are a couple other requests in the six figures for other types of what I understand to be computer programming, and you'll please correct me if I'm wrong. That says to me that a bunch of computer programmers are going to be spending thousands of man hours to make this system. And what you said to us during your presentation is that we're one of the only states that doesn't have this. So my question is there something off the shelf we can get? Why are we recreating the wheel? Or maybe explain to me why that type of expense and effort is required to get you all to where you need to be, please.
Recognize.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative, for the good question. Part of that request also includes equipment and the salary of those individuals. And since our system is proprietary in nature, because it's going to be part of our juvenile justice information system, that's why we asked for that, for those individuals to be part of that. And we want to make sure that the individuals that we have on staff are able to work on that. Is there an off-the-shelf product? Don't know.
You recognize?
Well, I guess my question is there's 49 other states and territories and maybe the other governments, levels of government that do this. If we're going to be spending $1 million of taxpayer money, let's find out. We have plenty of time between now and budget conference. Let's find out what else we can do from other states. I understand some of it's equipment, some of it's ongoing personnel. I understand that. Let's find out what we can do. Maybe Georgia or Ohio has a system and it's computer programming, right? So you copy. I mean, can you look into that and get back to my office, please?
We can look into that. And we run the entirety of the system with exception. Some states run different parts of the system. So, yes, sir.
We'll be glad. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Obviously, we're cognizant of that.
Okay. Next up, Representative Benjamin, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question basically just goes to conversations, that conversation I just heard and the conversation I heard with Representative Gottlieb, and that is what assessments go into you making the budget? Like, was Broward County asked, do you guys need maintenance or do you need a new building? You know, what assessments do you guys make before you come and make, before you create your budget request?
You recognize?
Yes, sir. Representative, great question. We have a whole general services division that maintains and looks at our buildings and does assessments at our buildings. And based on that, they make recommendations. And then subsequently, they make recommendations to myself. So.
You recognize for another question?
So would it be safe to say, thank you, Mr. Chair. Would it be safe to say that someone from Broward then spoke to this assessment person and they decided that Broward doesn't need a new building, they just need maintenance?
I'll be happy to check on that, Representative, and get back with you. I don't have an answer for you at this moment, but I will be very happy to.
Okay, next up, Vice Chair Fernandez-Burkin, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hi, Madam Secretary. Thank you
Hello.
For coming.
How are you?
I was just wondering, do you have any statistics regarding the turnover of the employees?
You recognize for an answer?
Yes, sir, for our JDO1, JDO series, and we have a whole packet of information we can send to you. Our JDO, there's a 68% turnover rate. For our JDO2 is 42%. And
how about for the supervisor?
For the supervisor, do not have it. It's just a JDO2, and I can get that for you.
You recognize.
And how about in regards to statistics for a turnover rate for JPOs?
Our JPOs, our average turnover rate right now is 17%, and it was 17% at the moment. Now, our JDOs are, I will say, our judicial detention officers, we're hiring them at 18, and the qualifications for our JPOs, which, as you can understand, and they work with our families throughout the entirety of the process and the entirety of the system, they are college graduates.
Thank you.
I have a quick follow-up on that. On the turnover rates that you expressed, mm-hmm. over what time period is that? Sometimes it would be 1 year turnover is 42%, or that's over 2 years?
We, Representative Chair, thank you for a great question. We looked at it, and our turnover rate has been going up and up and up over the last 5 years, and it has gotten, as what I call, considerably worse than last year. But we have done that. We have that information, and we're happy to send it to you so you can have it in front of you and anyone from the committee who would like to have it.
Representative Benjamin, you recognize?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With regards to the turnover, is there a report that we can look at that shows us what are some of the other factors that contribute to the turnover rate other than pay? Because I'm assuming that there's other factors other than just the pay.
You recognize?
We have the information, the study, the information that we have, Representative, we can send to you.
Thank you. And, yeah, on that note, there seems to be some questions about turnover and the rate. So could you give us a complete profile and overview of the just some of the pay, the turnover, the time? In other words, 42%, is that you hire somebody, 42% are gone the first year, or is that a two-year figure? And we used to
be happy to send you the information that we have that my staff has put together. We spent a lot of time on it. So, yes, sir. Thank you.
Great.
Be very happy to inform you and educate you.
Seeing no further questions, thank you for your appearance here today.
And thank you all very much. And I want to extend at any time, if you would all like to come to our detention facilities or our residential programs, you all are welcome to go. I would love to take you if you'd like to come along, because I think that as we talk about these funding issues and what our kids need, it's good that you go. And we would love to have you. And we thank you very much for your time and attention.
Thank you. Next up, presenting on behalf of Attorney General Moody and the Department of Legal Affairs is Chief of Staff Richard Martin. You are recognized.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Let me get my presentation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good afternoon, members. My name is Richard Martin. I'm the Chief of Staff in the Florida Attorney General's Office. On behalf of the Attorney General, I'd like to thank you all for your continued support of the department. With me here today is our Chief Deputy Attorney General, John Gard, and our Deputy Director of Administration, Sarah Nortelis. Hopefully, if there's any questions I can't answer, they can. I'd like to present to you the department's legislative budget request for fiscal year 22-23. The Attorney General is a statewide elected official and a member of Florida's cabinet. She serves as the head of the Department of Legal Affairs, the state's law firm. Our authority exists in the Florida Constitution and Chapter 16 Florida statutes and is designated in other statutes. Overall, this first slide shows an overview of our 21-22 budget. Our total budget is $368.9 million. The trust fund split, that's about 80% trust fund, 19.2% general revenue. Of that total amount, $222.6 million are grants that we provide to others, like our VOCA grants, our state general revenue grants, crimes compensation, and our Crime Stoppers grant. So the grants that we provide represent about 60% of our total budget. There are three programs within the department overall: the Office of the Attorney General, the Office of Statewide Prosecution, and the Florida Elections Commission. That's we have a total of 1,219.5 FTEs. So as in prior years, the Attorney General's budget request is relatively modest. This request represents a small 3.7% increase over our current fiscal year budget. There are 10 issues that we have for you this year addressing the Attorney General's priorities and restructuring our staff to help set us up for success as a 21st century law firm. The first issue is a Solicitor General workload. That's a request for $500,000 in rate and $853,000 in general revenue to fund five new Solicitor General positions to handle increased caseloads. The Solicitor General's office has expanded their work to include representation of the state in high-profile criminal cases before the Florida Supreme Court and the United States Supreme Court. That additional workload and other workload in the SG's office justify this request. We currently have 10 attorney positions in the Solicitor General's office. 8 of those are currently filled, and we're seeking 5 additional positions to try to address workload within the SG's office. The second issue is the Office of Statewide Prosecution Cyber Fraud Prosecution Staff. So the Attorney General has created within the office a Cyber Fraud Enforcement Unit, which is a combination of statewide prosecutors and consumer protection staff to try to go after, investigate, and if possible, prosecute cyber fraud incidents that are affecting Floridians, small businesses, and consumers. The request is seeking $392,000 in rate, $690,000 in revenue, and 6 staff FTE to help combat cyber fraud. This would be 4 analysts to gather and analyze data from the FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center database, which is the repository for cyber fraud incidents. And Florida currently ranks 2nd in the nation in cyber fraud incidents affecting our citizens. And so these analysts would be gathering this data, following up with affected parties, and then working with law enforcement to try to investigate these and, if possible, either prosecute them or refer them to our federal counterparts for investigation. An additional position would also be allocated as a community outreach coordinator. The best protection against cyber fraud is to not click on links and open strange attachments. What we found is that a lot of our victims are seniors or vulnerable individuals who don't understand what they're looking at and mistakenly click on something. So we can do a lot in the realm of prevention by notifying people about current attacks, current threat vectors, current scams, and using the Attorney General's platform to try to educate the public and small businesses about how not to get caught by these kinds of scams. And the last position in the FTE would be an administrative position to help work with this unit. The next issue is an attorney retention and pay restructure within the department. We're requesting $7.6 million of that for roughly $4 million in general revenue and $3.6 million from in trust fund authority. The goal of this is to restructure the compensation within the Office of the Attorney General to help raise our attorney salaries to make them competitive and help us recruit and retain attorneys within the agency. We're proposing to restructure the pay scale by increasing base compensation among all of our divisions and then increasing pay scales in units that are requiring specialized legal skills within the department. We currently have 390 attorneys in the Office of the Attorney General and 52 in the Office of Statewide Prosecution. We've gathered a lot of data and information already that we've shared with staff on this issue, and we have a lot more. The next issue is a legal support staff restructure. So we're seeking $1.1 million. This is $338,000 in general revenue and $772,000 in trust fund authority. What we're trying to do currently, we have 15 different position classifications for people within the agency who work as legal assistants. And so we're looking to restructure that those job classifications into the same structure that the state attorneys recently adopted within the last year to a five-step structure for legal assistants and a 3-step for paralegals. So it would be the same structure that JAC currently has with the same salary and pay bands for those positions. The next issue is an agency support services competitive pay adjustment. This is addressing compensation within our Division of Administration, Information Technology, and Citizen Services. These are the back office, both the back office of our agency and the public face, our Office of Citizen Services, who operates our call center and correspondence center. They've seen a significant workload increase over the last couple of years during the pandemic, but also as related to a lot of other things. And while at the same time, their current salaries are not competitive with other government call center operations, and they're seeing increased workload. One thing I'll say about the Attorney General's Office of Citizen Services is this is not a call center where you can train someone, you know, here's the 10 issues that you're likely going to experience when you get calls and how to handle them. The kinds of calls, the scams that consumers are facing, the issues that consumers are facing, they vary from day to day, from week to week. They staff our price gouging hotline during hurricanes. And so you have to have flexibility, the ability to adapt. So we need really good qualified people in this call center to be, they're our sort of frontline intake with consumers to gather information and to try to follow up on emerging scams. We get a lot of information about sort of what's going on out there around the state through this call center. And so it's very important for us to upgrade the expertise there. The Division of Administration request is about increasing the salaries for our human resources staff and our finance and accounting staff as we adopt new platforms, the Florida Palm Project, and our new HR systems to try to help increase the skill levels that we have in those divisions. The next issue is a statewide prosecution workload issue. So we're asking for 6 senior attorney positions in statewide prosecution with $910,000 in general revenue. This would be to fund 2 prosecutors dedicated to organized retail theft, which is a priority issue for the Attorney General, and 4 positions dedicated to gaming enforcement. With the creation of the Florida Gaming Control Commission and a new specialized law enforcement agency, we believe there's going to need to be some dedicated prosecutors who are going to be specialized in gaming enforcement, who understand this very highly technical, complicated area of the law, and to be able to assist the Gaming Control Commission in cases that they may bring forward. The next issue, issue 7, this is a request for $1 million in recurring general revenue to supplement declining revenue in the Crimes Compensation Trust Fund. This is our victims compensation program. This $1 million was funded last year to offset the $1.4 million general revenue surcharge that's assessed against the trust fund so that $1 million can be used to pay compensation to victims. And we'd like to have that continued again this year. Many of you are familiar with the programs. They fund domestic violence relocation, victim compensation, funeral expenses for victims of crime as a payer of last resort. Oh, whoops. Sorry about that. The issue number 8 is our information technology, cybersecurity, and performance monitoring software upgrades. We're requesting $318,000 in general revenue for 3 types of specialized software to assist our information technology staff. We're in the final year a multi-year information technology modernization program. And the result of that, now that we are building it and implementing all these technologies, we need to be able to monitor it effectively to help reduce our cloud storage costs and to assess our network performance and to better secure it, both from a cybersecurity perspective. This involves retaining cybersecurity experts to do penetration testing and threat assessments against our network because it contains some very sensitive information, and also to monitor credentialing across our network for employees who have different levels of access to be able to minimize the level of access that employees need. The next issue, issue number 9, is our office-wide project to try to put Wi-Fi access in our offices around the state. We have 12 offices around the state, and for any of you that have practiced law and have gone into a conference room to conduct a deposition, And we don't have Wi-Fi in our offices. So if you need access to anything during a deposition, you can't get it. If you're a law enforcement agent, you come in to meet with our prosecutors, and you need to get access to your systems to review evidence, we don't have that Wi-Fi access. So our internal networks have to be CJIS compliant, and so we would like to create Wi-Fi access in our offices around the state so that when our partners come in to meet with us, they'll be able to access a separate secured network for Wi-Fi. And that's our last issue, issue number 10, is a position shift. This was to shift positions that were funded out of the Crimes Compensation Trust Fund into our Federal Grants Trust Fund. We did this last year through a budget amendment. We'd like to do that again so that those positions are properly funded through where they actually exist now. That that concludes the presentation. Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions, and thank you to all the members again for your continued support.
Thank you. We'll now take questions. First up, Representative Crusoe, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Martin, for your presentation. Blew me away there at the end with the comment regarding Wi-Fi in the 12 offices. Have you made this request in the past, and has it been turned down?
You recognize?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. No, we haven't. And as I traveled around the state and visited our offices, as we've moved to all of these cloud-based technologies, and I go into an office and I want to go and access our systems, and I was told we don't have Wi-Fi in the office. So I started talking with our team, and I said, well, why not? And they said, well, we've never done it. And I said, well, we need to. And so, this is a new request, and we think that it is needed.
Follow up.
You recognize?
I'd say it's probably much needed and would make working there more efficient, and I'd be up on that. But it's not that time of the year, but thank you.
Okay, next up, Representative Learned, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you. I just wanted a quick clarification. You said there was a bunch of high-profile cases filed out of the Solicitor General's office. I was hoping you can give me a little background on what those cases are.
You recognize?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Solicitor General is the chief appellate officer for the state of Florida, represents the state in all significant appeals before the Florida Supreme Court and the United States Supreme Court. So we have, for example, we have a case involving Medicaid reimbursements where certiorari was granted before the United States Supreme Court this year. That'll be coming up. A lot of our the constitutional initiative cases, there are significant criminal issues. So one of the things that we've done this past year, a lot of the issues involving Hearst and some other significant criminal cases, we've had the Solicitor General's office get involved in writing briefs and assisting with arguments in front of the Florida Supreme Court. One of the things they did this past year was draft an amicus brief that we wrote on the court's modification of the summary judgment rule. So we got them involved in doing that. So previously, they had not been involved in advocating on behalf of the state as a litigant when the court identifies changes to rules of civil or criminal procedure, and to advocate on behalf of the state. So there are those cases, in addition to a lot of the legal challenges that arose out of last session that are now working their way through the courts, including before the 11th Circuit and the Florida courts.
Okay, next up, Representative Fabricio.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for your presentation. In regards to items number 8 and 9, with regard to cybersecurity and then the Wi-Fi that was previously discussed, has the AG's office, is the AG's office working in conjunction with the CIO's office and DMS to make sure that these would comply with enterprise architecture?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes. We work with the CIO's office regularly, and we're sort of leading a lot of state agencies in this area as we're moving to cloud-based platforms. Our IT modernization project is ahead of a lot of other state agencies, but we've been working with them significantly on cybersecurity.
Next up, Representative Benjamin, you're recognized for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to go to the attorney pay and retention. The request you're making will take these attorneys from where to where?
You recognize?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the proposed request would involve a couple of things. It would take a $10,000 across the board base compensation increase. So for our attorney AAG position, which is our entry level attorney position, their current starting salary is $43,900. State attorneys are currently offering anywhere between $50,000 and $52,000 for entry level attorneys. So we're $7,000 to $8,000 behind them currently in our entry level positions. I had an email somebody sent me this morning from a career services department from a law school that said, you know, we would really like to pitch our graduates on working in the Attorney General's office, but the salary is just too far below what the state attorneys are offering. And so part of what we're trying to do is address that issue to bring them from 43.9 to 54. And then our AAG positions, which are our 3 years and up, would move to a base level of around 65, which we did a comparison of city attorney and county attorney's offices. And so entry-level attorney positions at a lot of those offices are around that level. So we try to stay at, or are trying to get to a competitive level with other government agencies that are competing for the same employees. The second part of the request addresses specialized areas within the agency, the Solicitor General's Office, statewide prosecution, Medicaid fraud, antitrust, consumer protection, tax litigation. These are specialized areas where attorneys have to have specialized skills, and they're very marketable out in the private sector or in our federal counterparts. And so creating an increased compensation level for those units to address retention there.
Okay, recognize for follow-up, but let me jump in here. We have about 25 minutes left in this meeting and still need to hear from FDLE. So I have Representatives Beltran, Davis, Koster, and Ranking Member Gottlieb behind. And Mr. Martin, if questions, let's keep answers as short as possible, because I'd like to wrap this up 5 minutes or less so we can move on to FDLE. You recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the specialized departments such as gaming that you mentioned, are we seeking attorneys that already have this specialization, or are we looking at entry-level attorneys that will be trained in this specialization?
You recognize.
We would be developing their expertise in gaming enforcement. There's not a market out there for prosecutors who specialize in gaming enforcement in the state of Florida, because that's been a very limited enforcement area heretofore. So we're going to be developing them as highly trained, specialized prosecutors.
Okay, thank you. Next up, Representative Beltran.
Thank you, Chairman. It's always good to see you, Mr. Martin. In the interest of time, I'll waive my questions, and maybe you and I can sit down and kind of drill down on some of this maybe the next committee week, if you don't mind.
Perfect. Thank you. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Chair. Just really quickly, I thought you were going to answer it when you were talking to Rep. Benjamin, but in the looking at your FTEs, was there any kind of formula that you used to come up with this with six? Specific number as to the FTEs that you needed?
You recognize?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We did a breakdown of every attorney position within the agency, applied the $10,000 across the board increase to those existing FTEs, and then the specialized units that I talked about. We have a sort of pay brackets for assistant. So for example, assistant statewide prosecutor, senior assistant statewide prosecutor, and then bureau chief and special counsel at 80,000, 100,000, and 120,000 for those positions. So we went position by position for what each increase would be for that particular position. That's how we came up with the number, including benefits, et cetera.
Thank you. Set. Okay, next up, Representative Koster.
Thank you, Chair. Really quickly, with respect to the Solicitor General, I believe, and if I misheard you, please correct me, that you said there's currently 10 attorneys within that office. 8 of those positions are filled, so that I'm assuming that there's 2 vacancies, but you're asking for an additional 5. Is that correct so far? Did I say all that correct?
Sure. That's correct.
Okay. Follow-up, Chair. So what, I guess, is the assumption that you still need those additional 5 on top of filling those 2 vacancies, and what struggles have you had in filling those 2 vacancies? How long have they been vacant?
You recognize?
The primary struggle, the typical candidate in the Solicitor General's office graduated from one of the top law schools in the country, clerked for a federal district judge and a federal circuit court of appeals judge, and has years of experience at some of our nation's leading law firms. Our typical competitor for candidates in the Solicitor General's office is the state of Texas. They offer 50% more in salary than we do. So we've been losing lots of candidates to Texas because they pay a lot more. And so those 2 positions, one of them recently became vacant, and we're actively recruiting to fill that position. But the salaries that we offer, they're very good for Solicitor General's office as it relates to other areas of the agency, but compared to what these attorneys can make in the private sector or in other SG's offices, they're not competitive.
Okay, next up, Ranking Member Gottlieb.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to go back to a question you had, or an answer you had, rather, from Representative Learned. And your answer was phrased in a way that said these were dealing with the legal challenges from the last session. Are you talking about the Solicitor General taking on such as Amendment 4 in sanctuary cities, and that's a cost that's borne by your office?
You recognize?
So cases in which there are appellate matters on behalf of the state of Florida, so for instance, the sanctuary cities litigation, that's a case we represented our office represented the Attorney General and the Governor at the trial level. The SG's office will be involved in that appeal. And there are other legal challenges where there may be private counsel who have been retained at the trial level. The Solicitor General's office is going to be involved in many of those appeals at the appellate level.
Brief follow-up.
Recognize.
Just in the interest of time, can you later, I assume you don't have off the top of your head, a breakdown of what it costs to defend the legislature in those types of suits?
You recognize?
Not off the top of my head.
But you could get that for us. Sorry, Chair.
Problem.
But you could get that for us?
We could gather that information, yes.
I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. That'll conclude the questions, and we want to really thank you very much for your appearance today. And we'll be moving on now to our final presentation, presenting on behalf of Commissioner Richard Swearingen and the Florida Department of Law Enforcement is Chief of Staff Ron Dre. Mr. Dre, you recognize.
Thank you, Chair Plakin, Ranking Member Gottlieb, members. I'm Ron Dre, as the Chair said. I'm on behalf of Commissioner Swearingen. I appreciate the opportunity to present the department's key legislative budget priorities for fiscal year 22-23.
Just a moment before you get started, the previous presenters and yourself, please make sure you filled out an appearance card today. We can do that. And give it to staff.
Sure thing.
After the meeting, it'll be fine. Thank you.
I want to start with a quick overview of the department's current base budget, which totals $281 million and includes 1,932 FTE positions. As you may know, the department is spread out over 5 program areas and 7 regions across the state. General revenue accounts for about 47% of the department's appropriations, totaling $131 million. and state and federal trust funds account for 38 and 15% of the department's budget, respectively. Shifting to our fiscal year 22-23 LBR requests, we have 12 priorities totaling $32.7 million to continue our efforts to sustain an effective workforce, support our law enforcement partners, and enhance infrastructure for public safety. The request includes $14.1 million in general revenue, $18.6 million in trust fund authority, and about $14.1 million in recurring funds. Real briefly, I'll highlight these 12 priorities. First, the department is requesting $7.6 million in general revenue and trust fund authority to enhance our investigative workforce. Similar to the previous two presenters, this is a pay issue. The department recruits agents with 2 to 5 years investigative work experience to work long-term, multi-jurisdictional, and complex investigations. In recent years, it's become increasingly difficult to recruit and retain well-trained and experienced investigators because of the below pay and salaries that have remained about the same for the past 15 years. The department is proposing to increase the base rate of pay for agents from $45,820 to $58,000 to create a formal step pay plan. To address compression issues, we're also proposing to increase a similar raise for inspectors from $50,401 to $63,080 with established steps and adjust the pay salary for special agent supervisors from $72,000 to $79,350. This request also includes $2.7 million to address existing salary shortfall in investigative services. The department currently holds about 25 special agent positions vacant to stay within the limits of our appropriations. Next, the department's requesting $1.3 million in general revenue and 3 FTE positions to support the Behavioral Threat Assessment Program. In February 2019, Governor DeSantis directed FDLE to develop a unified statewide strategy to mitigate and prevent threats of targeted violence like tragedies at Pulse, the Fort Lauderdale-Hollywood International Airport, and Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, and provide appropriate training. BTAM is a proactive investigative methodology which identifies and assesses and manages persons who may pose a threat with a goal of detecting and disrupting these threats before they happen. The 2020 legislature allocated $2.4 million and 10 FTEs for BTAM. FDLE has established 3 regional programs and began training internal and external partners. The program will be expanded to all 7 of FDLE's regions by the end of the year. We're requesting 3 FTEs to handle increased workload and ensure overnight coverage in our Intelligence Watch and Warning Unit. This is a 24/7 unit, which is vital in receiving, triaging, and disseminating real-time tips and intelligence to the regional teams. Request also includes a feasibility study for a new investigative report management system to support current investigative needs and to develop and evolve an evidence-based policing strategy. Our current system is about 25 years old. And additional funds are requested for consulting fees for forensic psychologists and overtime and training for our law enforcement partners. The next item is a request for $5 million in general revenue to address criminal justice trainings and standard trust fund solvency. The trust fund supports operations of our trust fund commission and the professionalism division. Over the past decade, the trust fund has decreased and multiple strategies have been implemented, including non-recurring cash infusions, fund shifts, and budget reductions. While these have reduced the obligation of the trust fund, the absence of a cash infusion leaves it once again in danger of insolvency by the end of next fiscal year. This is still a Band-Aid until the revenue source issues are addressed. Next, the department is requesting $888,000 in general revenue and 2 FTE positions for the final year of the Florida Arrest Affidavit Project build. Those of you in Monday's Judiciary Committee meeting heard more specifics about this project. Real briefly, it was mandated by the 2019 legislature to increase the consistency of information submitted as part of the arrest booking process. It will also help ensure successful implementation of criminal justice data transparency and the Florida Incident-Based Reporting System projects. The FAA creates a uniform arrest affidavit for use by all law enforcement agencies statewide, and it went live last week. The department's now shifting to onboarding of a group of local pilot agencies. This is year four of a four-year project totaling about $11 million. Next, the department is requesting $2.4 million in general revenue for the final year of the Florida Incident-Based Reporting System build. This project was also discussed at Monday's Judiciary Committee meeting. In January, the FBI began phasing out of uniform crime reporting summary data in favor of incident-based crime reporting data. This request marks year five of a five-year project totaling $33 million. The requested resources will support onboarding of contributor agencies and provide maintenance and repository and the state-sponsored record management system. Next, the department is requesting $863,000 in general revenue and two FTE positions to implement the sexual assault tracking system. Last session, the legislature passed Gale's Law, which requires the department to establish and maintain a system to track the location of sexual assault kits through the evidence process. We've developed a three-phase plan to ensure implementation by the July 1st, 2023 deadline, and that includes a pilot this year in the North Florida using current funding. I should note the department has applied for a federal funding grant in the amount of $960,000 to cover the initial costs of the implementation. However, this federal funding will not support ongoing operations beyond the first year. The requested two FTEs would manage and administratively support the program. Next, the department is requesting $4.6 million in general revenue and operating trust fund authority for the new Pensacola Operations Center facility. In July, the department entered into a 25-year private lease for a 78,000 square foot build-to-suit facility. We anticipate taking occupancy in February of 2023. Besides getting us out of a less than favorable current building situation, the new facility will allow the department to expand laboratory services. Our forensic space is pretty much maxed out in the five other existing labs, so this will positively impact these services statewide. This request includes $600,000 in general revenue, recurring general revenue for a rent increase for the partial year, February through June, a $1.4 million in non-recurring operating trust fund tenant broker commission authority, and $2.6 million in non-recurring operation trust fund authority for furniture, fixtures, equipment, and moving costs. Next, the department is requesting $5.3 million in operating trust fund authority for repairs to our Tampa regional facility. A 2016 facility condition assessment identified ADA compliance issues, facility deficiencies, and preventative maintenance issues. This request represents year three of a four-year request totaling $18.4 million. Following completion of this multi-year project, the department intends to request DMS ownership of the facility and it be added to the Florida facilities pool. Next, the department is requesting $3.5 million in general revenue and federal grant trust fund authority to modernize the biometric identification system. This is a highly specialized solution that matches biometric identification fingerprints collected at the 3,000 arrest bookings that occur in the state each day. The system is near end of life and capacity. It's about 12 years old. This is the first year of a four-year project worth an estimated cost of $15 million. A majority of this request will be covered by a federal grant, but a general revenue match is required. Next, the department is requesting $990,000 in operating trust fund authority to purchase 30 additional investigative vehicles. FDLE maintains a fleet of 635 vehicles. Maintaining a ready fleet is critical to officer safety and public safety. The department receives about $540,000 recurring general revenue and trust fund authority annually to replace about 18 vehicles per year. We have 218 vehicles, about 34% of our fleet, eligible for replacement, and 37 outstanding vehicles. Purchases will probably not be fulfilled this year due to lack of inventory from car manufacturers. The average cost of a new vehicle suitable for FDLE's mission is about $33,000. Next, the department is requesting $350,000 in operating trust fund authority for increasing credit card fees. Fees from credit card companies have increased, along with increase in electronic submission of fingerprint credit card transactions. In fiscal year 2021, we did about 2 million transactions and paid $2.3 million in credit card fees. Department is able to recoup some of these fees from customers as we authorize to collect a dollar for transactions processed through our website, but we still anticipate a budget shortfall by fiscal year 23-24. And our final priority is a request for $31,500 in operating trust fund authority for tenant broker commissions for three private leases. State agencies are required to engage a tenant broker to negotiate all private leases for office and storage space exceeding $2,000. And we have three renewal leases coming up next fiscal year for our Tallahassee warehouse and hangar, our Sebring field office, and our Broward field office. That summarizes our 12 issues. I know I went through that really fast, but I knew we also had only about 15 minutes, so happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Representative Learned, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have two, but one is incredibly brief. You mentioned it was an increase in $32 million was your request. Do you have that as a percentage increase over from last year?
As opposed to last year, I don't, but it's I can get that for you. It's about 11% over our current budget, though. Okay.
You recognize?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I want to go back to the Gale's Law provision that you asked for. You mentioned there was a pilot program that you're running in Northwest Florida. I was hoping you could just give us a quick status on how that's going.
You recognize?
Sorry.
No problem.
We're just getting rolling on that. We're using current positions, and so we're going to buy some existing sexual assault kits. They have to have barcodes and to run that system, and so we're doing it out of our Jacksonville field office.
You recognize Representative Fabricio?
Thank you, Chair. Very quick question. I didn't quite understand the issue on the credit card fees. Mm-hmm. Is that a shortfall that the state, that FDLE is having to cover as a result of consumer background checks that you're doing?
You recognize?
Correct. We have a certain amount of authority that we're allowed to spend, and when we run more, well, the fees are going up, and when we run more checks than we expected, we're getting close to our authority, and so we're just asking for additional authority to cover that cost.
Representative Fabricio, you recognize?
Thank you, Chair. For a quick follow-up, is there a legislative change that we could do to correct that issue so that that cost is passed on and that the state isn't covering that shortfall?
You recognize?
We do charge a dollar fee. I'd have to go back and look at whether that's in statute or rule or whatever, but if we expanded that fee that the dollar fee is paid by the customer, if we expanded that fee onto the customer, then that would limit the amount of requirement on the state.
Okay, a quick question on Gale's Law. With the federal grant, there seemed to be optimism last year that would happen. How's it look?
I think we're very optimistic that we're going to get some money on that, yes. But the problem is what we were talking about with the biz, it only pays for the first year. It doesn't pay for it extending. So we feel like we're going to get some, I think timing-wise, it's just a challenge for us because of the fiscal year, the federal fiscal year. But I think we're feeling optimistic about that. But it will only help purchase the system that will go into place as far as it won't allow us to fund the positions and maintenance of the system.
So a question would be, is the grant is to purchase the system. If that is delayed for some, is that going to delay the implementation, or do you have a plan B? Or
I think... The way the fiscal year and the grant goes, and that's why we started a pilot, so we'll be able to use the federal grants to purchase the system. So I don't think there's going to be any problems with the timing.
Okay. Representative Benjamin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned a threat assessment system. Is that the system in which if someone made a threat, let's say a student made a threat at school, that threat would be assessed and they would then be placed on a list or something with regards to that? Is that the same system we're talking about?
You recognize?
So I think what you're talking about is the system that went in place after Marjory Stoneman Douglas. We had an app. They don't go on a list. We don't have a list, but there is an app that they can use if they make a threat through that system, and we track that down. So we work with school districts on that. That's just one of many ways that we can get a tip, but we don't put anybody on a list that we're gonna watch them or anything like that. But we do manage tips through various different systems, and one of those was the app that came out of Marjory Stoneman Douglas.
Right. Well, one more follow up, and then we've got to close it down.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there such an risk assessment system that does create a list?
You recognize?
So, and we can talk to you a little bit more offline about BTAM, but that's, I guess, is essentially what we're doing. We're not creating a list, but we're creating an assessment program and evaluating these individuals that, for whatever reason, come to our attention, and looking at ways that we can resolve them without something bad happen. So they do, it's a shift in philosophy on how we manage them, but there isn't a list that that we share throughout law enforcement agencies or anything like that. But it is a way to evaluate these folks that we will work with the local entities to kind of study the behaviors of them and that kind of thing. I just don't want you going away thinking that we have this, we're creating this list that is in the background or anything like that. But I'm happy to talk to you a little bit more about BTAM offline and where we're going with that.
Okay, thank you, and thank you for your presentation today.
Sure.
And members, I want to encourage particularly the new members to ask questions to Adam and his staff, or all the presenters today seem very open to have offline meetings, so we can, as we start to get into the crunch of this, we'll be, you know, better educated and learn the issues more thoroughly. Ranking Member Gottlieb, I look forward to working with you again this year. Last year was a very, bipartisan activity in the committee, so I look forward to working with all the members of the committee this year and trying to craft a budget that will represent Floridians very well. So that'll conclude our agenda today. Seeing no further business, Representative Davis moves we rise. Without objection, the meeting's adjourned.